Hello again, my beautiful darlings. I hope you are all doing splendidly today. We are going to go through the Crystal Rose post-mortem Q&A today. I am so grateful to every single one of you who has followed along with the series. It was such a grand adventure. I've never quite taken on a project in a similar vein to that, and the entire thing was a learning process. I really didn't know how it was going to be received, so seeing so many of you getting attached to the characters and asking questions and saying, you know, oh, I thought we couldn't trust her, I thought we couldn't trust this and that, it was so thrilling. It was almost disassociative at certain points because I wanted to speculate right along with you, and then I had to remind myself that I knew the answers and couldn't get into too many theories. So I collected all of the questions I got through the form. Thank you so much to every single one of you who contributed something. I've got myself a little Irish coffee here off to the side to keep me company, made using my dear grandmother's recipe. So if you hear me scream at some point, it's because I've spilled the bloody thing all over myself. So I've taken your questions, and like I did with my AMA, I've split them up a little bit to flow a little more naturally from topic to topic. So if you asked multiple questions, they may be spread out a bit. They may not be all in one chunk. So, I don't really know how to start this. I guess we'll just jump right in. Had a few questions sort of in the same vein, which was, how did you come up with the idea for Crystal Rose, and what was the planning process like? The idea came from a story treatment I'd written up a long while ago. Funnily enough, reading back through that treatment, it now has nearly nothing to do with how Crystal Rose ended up. That story was a massive generational steampunk epic with demons and automatons and immortal violinists and all sorts of fantastical things. But the central part of it was circled around a rose that had been created using diamonds and had information encoded within the petals. So I sort of took that idea and transformed it into something more modern day. I thought about incorporating some of the supernatural elements, but when I was planning to do this, I sort of realized that fantasy and supernatural sci-fi type of themes might require effects that are beyond my capabilities. So I tried to ground the story in a more realistic place, but there are still hints of the supernatural in there, especially within the bond between Celine and the listener. She mentions a few times that she feels bound or fated for that person, and that was the reason I sort of kept that in there, with a mind to, if I wanted to revisit some of those supernatural elements, that the foundation had been set. It was very funny to me. A lot of you in the beginning sent me messages speculating about different supernatural scenarios which could unfold at any given time. And that was one of the instances I had to sort of hold myself back and not say too much, because it could very easily go in that direction, and I may eventually take it there if I decide to do additional episodes or series. Seasons, I should say. So, as far as the planning process, once I sort of had set my mind to doing a series, I knew I would have to sit down and write out the story completely so that I had a guideline for where I wanted to go with it. One of my favorite all-time television shows, it was Lost, which suffered down the line from the writers not having a clear idea of where things were going to end and only having rough sketches of what the mysteries they set up were going to end up as. And it's still one of my favorite pieces of media, but I acknowledge there are some faults, especially down the end of the line. So I didn't want to fall into that trap. So what I did at the very beginning was I wrote down an outline of the entire story and separated it out into episodes in a way that I thought would help the pacing. I sort of fixed on the 6-episode model at the beginning, and I think that ended up being a good number. I don't think any of those episodes were unnecessary or filler episodes. I think every single one of them ended up containing something essential to the story. The trick is telling a story in the context of an audio like this is that it's going to move a lot more slowly than you think it is. Trying to cram too much into too short a time is going to leave the listener confused. So I tried to simplify the story as much as possible. Luckily, the format I chose lent itself to that in that it doesn't encourage the addition of lots and lots of characters to flesh out the story. We really only had 3 characters, I suppose. 4 if you count the narrator, which I don't really count her as a character. We had Celine, we had Felix, and we had the listener. There were a few incidental people mentioned along the way, the toughs and the servants who worked at Felix's house, and some of the people at the street festival and things like that. But I really simplified the storyline to make sure that everything could fit into the time allotted without throwing too much in all at once. And that's one of the reasons I've left things open for additional seasons, is if I wanted to expand on this world, and I do have ideas of where things could go, that I wouldn't have to do it all at once. So I wrote out an outline, a 6-episode outline, and then based the writing of my episodes from there. Again, if you listen to my AMA, if you hear walking around in the background, that's my dog. I've not taken the usual precautions I do when I'm recording today. Things are a little more casual, so apologies if you hear his claws tapping around in the background at times. I based every episode on my original outline that I wrote out at the beginning so that I could make sure that things were rounded out as they should be and that the story came to what I hope was a satisfying conclusion, even if it doesn't progress beyond that point. So the next question was, at what point did you have the whole plot figured out from start, or did you build itself as you wrote? So again, I wrote that outline at the very beginning. There were things that changed slightly from the outline to the final scripts, but having that outline was invaluable so that I knew what the end point was. One of the big changes is actually in episode 6. Originally, the listener was going to go back to the mansion at Felix's request and meet him in his study, the place where we stole the lens from, and you would be able to see that study in the full light of day. And the revelation that Celine had overtaken the entire family's empire would be evident because of the missing objects in Felix's study. I decided to change that for simplicity's sake. I found it, when I went to write the episode, it was slightly unnecessary to go through a task of having someone tell the listener that they needed to go back to the mansion in order to go back to the mansion, meet Felix, and then leave from there. It felt clunky, so I decided to change that a bit. There were some other minor things that got changed along the way, but for the most part, I did stick to that outline. I had the entire plot from the beginning, and I didn't want to do a series in which I didn't know the ending. That was a huge goal of mine at the start. Production-wise, did you write the story as you went along, or was it vaguely in your head at the beginning? So again, I had the outline that I had written out. The outline is actually what gave birth to the character of Felix. I realized that there needed to be a threat at some point in the story. And as sexist as this sounds, I felt having another female voice already along with the narrator and with Celine would complicate things for the listener. And naturally, for an audience that is mainly male, another male voice was going to be the more threatening thing. So that was when Felix was born. At first, I thought he and Celine would be twins. And then I sort of came up with the idea of them being cousins because I thought that was a more nuanced relationship. Maybe a relationship that doesn't get explored as much. You know, brother, sister, twins. It's a very familiar relationship in most media. But cousins, not necessarily something that gets explored quite as much, especially close cousins. A lot of people are very close with their cousins. So that's why he ended up being Celine's cousin as opposed to her brother. The other reason was when I realized I needed a male voice. My sweet friend, Music and Whispers, was the first person to spring to mind. And really realizing that his natural accent and my North American accent were quite different, I had to set some sort of separator in that to explain why the accents were slightly different. So yes, if you notice on the episodes in which he is present, I've tagged North American accents as opposed to American accents, because between the two of us, we're presenting a variety of North American accents. Next question. The series has a very 1920s radio play feel to me. Was that intentional? If so, why? And what did you do to create that feel? Yes, it was intentional, to a certain point. I realized early on the easiest way to tell the story was going to be using an omnipresent narrator. That is to say, a narrator who is not part of the story, is not a character, and doesn't focus on any singular point of view. At the beginning, I felt like that was a bit of a cheat, actually. And I told Music and Whispers, we'll say MW for brevity's sake. I told him, I'm cheating a bit. I'm using an omnipresent narrator. And he said to me, you're not cheating. You're selecting your tools. which I love that. So the omnipresent narrator, I think, does help to give it that radio play feeling. I think also my natural way of writing is a little old-fashioned, a little flowery, and it sort of lends itself to that that sort of format. At the same time, I've had a lot of people say that it gave them an audiobook feel, and that is also was sort of my goal, was a hybrid of a sort of BBC radio drama and an audiobook. Some of you will know I do voice work in my real life. A large amount of that voice work is narration. It's something I'm very used to doing, which is why I was able to get the cadence, the very soft, calming cadence of the narrator down quite easily. So I can't say it was anything specific in anything that I did intentionally. The radio play aspect is just something that sort of comes naturally to me. I would say some of it is also in the sound design. I went for more of a minimalistic sound design, only highlighting very specific moments of effects while creating softer atmospheres. I think that gives it that kind of radio play atmosphere, because you get the feel of the Foley artist, how they used to have them when they did those 1920 radio plays live in the studio doing sound effects. They had to be very selective about what they did and where they did it. So I think my sound design is also very reminiscent of that. I wouldn't say it was necessarily anything in the writing. Very much in the sound design. The language choices, setting aside the accents, really set off the narrator and Celine. Did that just occur to you naturally because of the first, second person split, or did you have to work at it? Writing-wise, I would say it came very naturally. Celine was a character. Her words are much more imbued with different motivations and intentions, whereas the narrator has no goals, no wants, no needs. The narrator is just there to provide information. When it comes to the accent split, that is actually why I chose to do that. I thought it would be confusing for the listener if I maintained my natural accent through both voices. So I decided to separate them with the use of the accent. It was the most overt choice I thought I could make. Some others have mentioned they noticed that Celine has a little bit different vocal quality, and that was also intentional. She has more variety in her speech. The narrator is a lot more monotone. And also, recording-wise, I recorded the narrator in mono, whereas I recorded Celine in stereo. So that is something that helped to set them apart audibly. It's very subtle, but it is there, and it does help to separate the two of them that way. So yes, there were intentional language choices between the two, for sure. Let's see. You were putting out an episode every 2 weeks. How long did the actual production take, start to finish, per episode? So I worked very in advance. I gave myself a large buffer to work with. I started working on Crystal Rose back in August, maybe even early July. I started writing it in July for sure. But I think the first recordings happened maybe early August. And I had the entire series in the can, as they say, mid-September. So it's been a while since I actually recorded any of the episodes. Start to finish, because I sat down and wrote that outline at the start, I was able to pretty much work through an episode per week. I would sit down at the beginning of the week, write out the script in one day, the next day edit the script. If needed, I would send it along to my co-star and wait for his bit. And by the weekend, I was usually ready to record my own parts. There was a bit of production help that I got from MW. He had offered a while ago to assist with some of the cleanup, which I struggle with on my vocal tracks when I'm recording them at home. So often I was recording the tracks on a Saturday or a Sunday, sending them off to him for cleanup, getting that back, then editing the episode, which would usually take a day to 3 days. I'd have to record the narrator as one track, Celine as a second track, send those both off for cleanup. And then once I got them back, edit them into a single track, overlapping in their dialogue. And if MW's character was in the episode, editing in that third track. And once I had the master track for all the vocals done, I could start in with the music and the atmosphere and the sound effects. So yeah, a day to 3 days, depending on how much elaborate work the sound design required. So I could usually get an episode out within the space of a week, 2 weeks at the most, but I was working very far in advance to make sure I had space for any production hiccups, because there's always something that comes up along the process. We did end up having a bit of a delay on episode 6, which was nobody's fault at all. But there was a rather significant delay in part of the production, which almost required a script rewrite. And at that point, I was very thankful that I had given myself that time buffer, so that if I needed to do a script rewrite and indeed cast another character, which was almost a possibility, I had the time to do that. So putting those buffer episodes in between each episode of Crystal Rose definitely helped that wise. It was also sort of a strategy that YouTubers use when they're producing longer series. They'll often sprinkle in things in between so that the part of their audience that is not there for the longer series has something else to watch. So that's why I put in the one-offs in between each episode, was so that the people who weren't here for the grand adventure that it was Crystal Rose had something that they could enjoy in the meantime. So yeah, a week and a half per episode. The later episodes took longer because there was more to do. But in general, about a week from start to finish on each episode. And but with a hefty buffer for delays. Did you do all of the recording at once and finish production at a later time? I didn't. I did do each episode on its own. Again, I wrote the outline at the beginning, but each script was written as the last one was finished. So I did record them in, well, technically, I guess it was 12 different sessions, one each for the narrator and Celine. Yeah, so it was 12 different recording sessions. and also MW, so that was an additional 3 recording sessions, so 15 recording sessions altogether to make the entire production. What part did you have the most fun writing and recording? I guess episode 4 was my favorite thing to write and edit. I don't know if that was necessarily my favorite recording. Episode 4 was extraordinary to me because I had such a large chunk of it given over to Felix. And I'd never been responsible for editing someone else's vocal performance before. That was extraordinary. It was so much fun. And such an odd experience to have someone else's voice coming through my editing headphones, as well as editing together a conversation that was happening between two people in two entirely different countries. In real life, not in the context of the scene. I listened to that episode probably more than I've listened to any of the other episodes because I just love the play between Felix and Celine trying to manipulate each other in that scene. That's my favorite type of dialogue to write, is where you've got two characters who are trying to manipulate each other. And I loved editing that episode and how it all came together. The sound, I was very happy with the sound design in that episode as well, especially the music. I know Moonlight Sonata and Danse Macabre, which were the two songs that played during Felix's dialogue. It's a little cliche, I admit it, but they worked so perfectly. I couldn't go back on something else. They just felt like, you know, Felix is a bit of a showman, and I thought that was something he would do to try and intimidate his house guest, was play some creepy music in the background. It was also sort of a nod to MW, who enjoys a touch of diegetic music. If you don't know what that means, diegetic is something that is within the scene. So within the scene, Felix is playing a record for real. There is music playing for real. It's not just something that the outside listener hears. It's something that the characters within the scene are hearing. And he uses it quite a bit in his audio, so that was my nod to him. But yeah, episode 4 in general. The morning sex scene in episode 5 was probably my favorite of the spicy scenes, because I felt it gave us a different view of Celine, and it sort of brought that worry of her running away in the night and leaving you alone a nice little conclusion. She didn't run away. She's here. She's here first thing in the morning and ready to go. And also, that entire scene was improvised. I didn't actually script that scene. I did a different mic setup so that it would sound more natural, and that necessitated me being away from my computer screen. So I didn't script that at all. That scene is entirely improvised. I'm rather proud of how it turned out. I did bump the mic stand a few times. Hopefully none of you noticed, or that it didn't take you out of it too much. I edited most of the most egregious bumps out, I think. I hope it's all right. Walk us through how on earth you managed to do such a convincing American accent. So as I said, I decided to give Celine an American accent to help separate her from the narrator. All I can say is that I have a lot of Americans in my life, and I'm a natural mimic, I suppose. So it sort of comes naturally to me. It makes me laugh every time someone commented on the American accent, because to me, it sounds so imperfect. I can hear all the mistakes I'm making. The funny thing to me was that those of you who joined during the course of Crystal Rose, some of you didn't know whether I was British or American. And because I think the vast majority of GWA listeners are American, they just sort of assumed I was American, which I suppose is flattering. But yes, I do accent coaching in real life, so it's something that does come naturally to me in a way, but also it is something that I have to work at. I don't know what to say other than that. What gave you the confidence that something so different could fit and thrive on GWA? I didn't have the confidence that it would. More the arrogance that I wanted to do it, and therefore I was going to do it. There's a thing that Eddie Izzard says in her biography, that when she was first beginning stand-up, she borrowed confidence from her future self, which had already achieved what she wanted to achieve. So I guess it was a bit of that. A borrowed confidence from the vixen that had already released the entire series. but also, my lovely friend MW paved the way with his series, Breach, which was far more ambitious than anything I attempted to do with Crystal Rose. So I knew it could be done, and I knew that there would probably be an audience for it. It was a little difficult in that, you know, his audience is mainly female, my audience is mainly male. So I wouldn't say that it necessarily was a guaranteed success. And even by his standards, Breach underperformed, which is unbelievable to me. But I knew that a story told across several episodes could play well if it found the right audience. And thank God it did. So that's why I'm so appreciative of all of you. And did you grow more confidence as the series went on, as you edited more and more? It was more dynamic from parts 1 to 6 in a good way. Thank you. I would say yes. Sound design-wise, definitely. I began getting a little bit more ambitious with the sound as time went on, for sure. I wish I had incorporated a little bit more music in the beginning. I think from episodes 4 to 6, I incorporated music fairly regularly. But also, 4 to 6 had a lot more exposition, and I felt I needed something behind some of those longer monologues where you were getting more information, which is why I added in some more of the music. The thing I probably got the most ambitious with as time went on was layering atmospheric effects. In the beginning, I was using very ready-to-made atmosphere tracks from Freesound. And I started to notice my imagination exploring more in the scene that would make noise. So I'd started layering additional things in. So it wasn't just, you know, crickets. Now there was also traffic and crickets, or there was voices in the background, or, you know, things like that. So definitely my editing, I think, got a lot better from episode 1 to episode 6. There was also a massive mistake that I made in episode 1 with the vocal tracks, where I edited the narrator and Celine into one track before sending it to MW for cleanup, and realized how stupid that was to do, because it was two different atmospheric noise floors on those tracks that I had now edited together and hadn't saved them individually like an idiot. Luckily, he was able to rescue most of it. But that's one of the reasons why there's a bit more of a hum in episode one than there is in the rest. The rest sound much more clean. Did you choose the name Celine for any particular reason? I have to admit, I didn't. She sort of named herself. Sometimes when I'm writing characters, I do pick names extremely deliberately. I've got a book on my shelf that I use all the time. It's tattered and torn. Of names, and it's got country origins and language origins and meanings and connotations and all sorts of things. I love going through that and sort of finding names that have connotations that secretly reveal the character's motivations. But in the case of Celine, she named herself. It just sort of sprung fully formed onto the page. Same with Felix, actually. I didn't purposefully pick the name Felix. He just sort of named himself. I realized afterwards, I have a friend who, a couple who recently had a child, and the little boy's name is Felix. So I think subconsciously I had that name in the back of my head. And when I was writing the character, he sort of chose from my memories. but yeah, Celine, I didn't pick for any particular reason. It's funny, a lot of people brought up connotations of Catwoman, Selina Kyle, which I did not make on purpose, but I love that. She definitely has a hefty shot of Catwoman in her, doesn't she? Do you have an idea or mental image of how the ring, the crystal rose, the set, etc. look like? Yes. The ring especially I sort of pictured as a more of a masculine ring where the stone is smooth on top and inset into a wider band with the roses going down the side of the band. Sort of like a signet ring, I suppose, but with the facets on the underside of the stone so that when you looked into it, you could see that it was faceted, but from looking at it on the side, it looked perfectly smooth. The crystal rose, definitely I had a mental image of, with sort of golden wires twirled around themselves into a stem and these perfectly sculpted diamonds that were faceted, fitting into a setting that they could be easily removed from. The set, I suppose the town where the thing takes place, had a bit of an Italian seaside town or a Spanish seaside town feel to me, but also a touch of American Pacific Northwest. So it wasn't based on any one real place. I tried to make the descriptions of the location quite vague and broad so that they would fit in with anyone who was listening's point of view. So a very generic forest, a very generic beach, very generic city streets sort of thing. But in my mind, it had a bit of a, yeah, I suppose, an Italian-Spanish seaside town sort of setting. Plot-wise, did you choose the Aston Martin DVX for any particular reason? I like the pick. It gave it a slightly James Bond feel. It's so funny. I don't actually remember why I decided to mention the exact make and model of the car. At the time, things were a bit James Bond crazy. I think when I was writing, it was just when hype was starting for the new movie. I had actually recorded a voiceover for a commercial relating to the new movie. And there was a podcast I'd listened to that had mentioned doing promotions for the new movie by riding around town in an Aston Martin. And I think about the same time I was asked to sing a James Bond theme song for the songbook they put together on GWA backstage. I just sort of had James Bond on the mind for whatever reason. And so in that scene, I thought, oh, they should be taking an Aston Martin into the forest. Of course they should. As Celine says, it's good enough for James Bond. Why shouldn't it be good enough for us? But I didn't want people picturing a sort of sports car. I wanted it to be more of an SUV or a heavy-duty sort of vehicle. And I went and looked up what that would mean in the context of an Aston Martin, came across the DBX. So, yeah, that's why I, for some reason, just decided I will specifically say it's an Aston Martin DBX in silver. And I realized, listening back through, that it almost comes across sounding like a sponsorship, which I assure you, it was not. But because it's the only real-world brand I mentioned, it certainly sounds that way. Which I think actually is sort of fun in the context, because Aston Martin pays big dollars to be featured in those James Bond movies, so... sort of, I guess, an odd to that. Yeah, it's mostly just a James Bond illusion, but why I decided to mention the exact make and model, I do not remember. In episode 6 with Felix, the beginning felt like a flashback to the first episode where we felt Celine's eyes on us the first time. Was that an allusion to the beginning, a sort of beginning and end circle? Absolutely. As I said in the original outline, the listener was going to go back to the mansion to have that conversation with Felix. And it didn't feel right when I came to write it. Mostly because putting Felix back into the setting of the mansion gave him a little bit more power in the scene, since that is his home base. So taking him out of that location, I think, helped to indicate that he had lost a certain amount of his power, and that he was now a little bit more feckless than the first time we met him. And that is definitely why episode 6 doesn't start with that theme music that I chose, which I know a lot of you commented on. I was so surprised about that. I began episode 6 exactly as I began episode 1, down to the same line about the eyes being on you. In storytelling, that's called a bookend. So it sort of gives you a nice, tidy little conclusion subconsciously. It sort of tells you, you know, this is the beginning of the end. Of course, we know season 2 is still a possibility, but I had to make sure that the first 6 episodes felt rounded and complete as possible. So that was a bit of a storytelling trick. Did you also envision Celine with glasses ever? I thought she might have glasses at one point. I didn't, but that doesn't mean you can't. I purposefully kept Celine's physical descriptions to a minimum. I think really the only thing I gave her was a curvy body and long hair. Never mentioned the colour of her hair, quite on purpose, because I want you, as the listener, to form her in your mind the way you see her, the way you want to see her, whether she's sweet-faced, a little older, or shorter, or, you know, broader shoulders, anything. I wanted to leave that open to your imagination. So I describe her clothes in detail, but I never described her physically on purpose. So if you picture her with glasses, then I love that. Continue to picture her with glasses. What sort of themes did you try to accomplish with this story? The main thing I set out to accomplish was to sort of play with the listener's trust, which I was thrilled to see came through quite well. The format of an erotic audio, will often, you know, contain a speaker and a listener. And the listener has the choice to either believe everything that the speaker is saying because they are responsible for building the world, or not necessarily accepting what is being told to them. So I wanted to play with that a bit. You've got this narrator in your ear telling you you felt this way, you acted this way because you felt this way. And there's always going to be a subconscious part of the listener thinking, but I don't feel that way. I don't trust her. And that was quite on purpose. I never wanted you to trust Celine as you, the listener, not necessarily you, the character. There's a very interesting thing that happens in that during the course of the series, Celine and Felix are telling you to believe two different things. And the fact is that nothing Felix says is a lie. Everything that Felix tells you is the absolute truth. And that's not necessarily the case with Celine. She has lied to you. But you're being told by the narrator to trust this person, that, you know, you trust her with your life and you want to protect her. And so I wanted to play with that. I wanted to really get people thinking, do I trust her? Is she earned my trust? I don't think she has. So that was my main goal with the series, is to sort of explore the relationship of trust between the listener and the characters. And did the quick bar meet in the first episode ever get explained more? I did say that it had some significance, for sure. It mostly gets mentioned in the second episode, where Celine says, if I had wanted just the ring, I would have taken it off of you in the bar. Which again goes along with that trust element. It was sort of spoken of to show that she really did lose herself in the moment. She took you to the bar with the intention of getting you drunk so she could slip the ring off your finger and then say goodnight and, you know, disappear into the ether. But during the course of that, she decided not to and decided to go home with you. And that is where things sort of switched for her from the ring being purely her motivation to letting herself get a little taken away with you as the listener. Pardon me while I take a sip of my coffee. I've thrown a little CBD in there because your girl's anxiety has been running high lately, so I need all the help I can get. Do you think Celine and the hero will ever have children together? And is there room for two of them, more than two of them, on the adventures? Will the happy couple settle down in their advanced years or keep adventuring and looking for treasure? Well, you're just going to have to wait to find out. I will say that things are not all not as they seem. And that the mistrust we've placed in Celine is still founded. She still is impulsive and has quite a few intentions she hasn't spoken aloud. So perhaps down the road they will find a happy ending together. But there's a lot more conflict to be had first. I don't want to give too much away. Is the original petal in Celine's pendant a petal of the discovered rose, or is there more roses out there? Given each petal is a rare diamond, then by rights they should be able to sell those petals to make the family fortune after they get the coordinates correct. Yes, correct. And even now, they could sell the diamonds from the crystal rose for a hefty payout. But thank God Celine thought to check them first. As she says, the family thought the rose itself was the treasure. The family knew all along they were looking for a crystal rose made of red diamonds. What they didn't know was that there was additional information hidden in those petals until Celine took a look at it. Yes, they could sell it, for sure, once they've gotten all of the other treasures collected. At this point, I don't know that Celine would. I think she's a little too sentimental. She probably would keep it. The petal on her necklace does not belong to another rose. Originally, it was going to belong to the crystal rose. I had a sort of idea that once they found the crystal rose, she would take the petal from her pendant, slot it into the rose to complete it, and then take the stone from the ring and put that at the center of the rose, and that would sort of cause a mechanism to unfold the petals. I decided against that when I realized they'd have to have several more tools in order to extract the stone from the ring. So I left that element out. But originally, they were going to be part of the original rose, which is why there's that line in there where she says, I think the pendant and the ring came from the same gemstone originally. So her petal, in my mind at this point, was made as a sort of template for the other petals, and to sort of hint in the direction of what they were looking for. So no, it doesn't belong to any other roses. There's only the one rose, but it was meant to hint at what the ultimate treasure was. I found you through music and whispers, and since both of you were in Breach in this, I wondered if Breach and Crystal Rose take place in the same universe. My original inclination was to say no. They are DC and Marvel, sharing some of the same actors, but not the same universe. But then I asked MW, and he said, of course they're in the same universe, so take that as you will. And that concludes all of the questions about Crystal Rose. So I've just got a handful of miscellaneous questions to round out the Q&A with. Someone asked, how's your morning, afternoon, evening been? Lovely. As I said, my anxiety has been running a bit high lately, so I am taking every opportunity I can to relax and enjoy the small moments of life. And I very much enjoyed sitting here talking to all of you, so it's going very well. Thank you. With your audios, do you ever envision a specific character for the listener to get into? Do you envision the listener as a grey man, just a shapeless figure that stories influence? Sort of in between. I never want to say anything too specific because I don't want anything to take the listener out. There was even a couple of audios early on where I said something about, you know, running my fingers through your hair or something. And I thought, you know, what if they're bald? It's immediately going to take them out of it. They're thinking, I don't have any hair. So I do try to keep any references to the listener very general. In fact, I think my very first audio is the only one that mentions penis size. Everything else, I've just complimented the aesthetics of the genitals of the listener, as opposed to commenting on the size of it. I didn't think that was quite fair, actually. There is a sort of personality that I imbue my listeners with, but I don't necessarily want that to come across, because, as I said, I want every listener to feel as though I'm speaking directly to them, and not trying to slot them into my fantasy, per se. Are you knowledgeable about cars at all? Your choice of the DBX sounds beyond normal, generic sounds. I like cars. I'm a little bit more knowledgeable about classic cars, sort of old Mustangs and Chevys and things, because of my dad. I wouldn't say I'm super knowledgeable about cars, though. I know what I like. We'll put it that way. but as far as the DBX goes, as I said, the Aston Martin bit was definitely supposed to be a James Bond illusion, but I do like Aston Martins. They're very slick. Did you ever consider voice acting prior to learning about GWA? Yes, I am. Professionally a voice actress, actually. Can't get too much into it just for privacy's sake, but I've been doing it for a long time. When GWA came along, it felt like a natural fit for my existing skill set. We'll say it that way. So the last three questions sort of all flow together. Will you ever do something like this again, or was it just a one-time thing? Do you have any other series in mind in the future, near or distant? And what's next? I would love to do another series. Absolutely. I will have to wait for an idea to strike me. My creative energy is extremely mercurial. It sort of comes and goes. And I'll get very taken with an idea one day, and the next day I think it's absolutely stupid, and I stop working on it. Which is why I have heaps and heaps of story ideas that never went anywhere. So yes, would love to do another series, but have to wait. As far as Crystal Rose, I do have ideas about where it could go. I want to introduce some other members of Celine's family who are maybe even a little bit more scary than Felix. I think at this point, Felix almost feels like a friend. and if I did a season two, it would definitely explore some new locations as they followed the petals to find other treasures. That will have to wait a bit. As for what's next, if you've seen my announcement post, you'll already know that, unfortunately, what's next for me is a bit of a break. I've loved my time here on GWA more than I can possibly tell you. But it's time for me to set a foot back into the real world, I think, and collect some more inspiration. So I do hope to be back. I really do think I will be back, but it probably won't be until at least the beginning of the year for some personal reasons. But I do hope that I can recharge a bit, come up with some new ideas for all of you, and find more ways to delight you and titillate you with my stories. So yeah, that is it for the Q&A. I, again, can't thank all of you enough for your support and your enthusiasm during the entire course of this series and during the entire course of my time here on GWA, as it is so far. I've never experienced an artistic outlet with as much positive reinforcement as I've gotten here. There's literally been no negative comments ever, which for the internet is extraordinary. It doesn't happen every day. So thank you all so much. I really, it is a bittersweet thing to let go of Crystal Rose for the time being. But hopefully Celine will be back for more adventures very soon. Thank you all so much. Have a wonderful day.